Welcome back to the Safety Storytellers Podcast. My name is Stacy, and I am your host. In the safety industry, personal stories and larger-than-life personalities keep us going. The old way of talking about safety is out. Thankfully, Peter Suska is writing a book about safety stories titled Beyond Safety. It isn't out yet, but get ready for it. In this chat, I talk with Peter, who is a principal for operational excellence, which is also known for OpEx safety. We talk about safety leadership gaps and how Peter focuses on changing not only how people think about safety, but also how they make decisions. All right, I'm with Peter, my old buddy, and we met last year. So much fun talking to you. I have no idea what we talked about last year. Do you? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
We talked about a lot of things.
We literally solved all the world's problems. I feel like that when we were done, I was like,
I don't even know what we're going to talk about now.
That was amazing. But what's happened in the past year for you? Anything good?
Yeah. You know, actually, just recently, my good friend Tom West at Make You Safe, which is right around the corner here, introduced me to a few folks. And Tom said, Pete, you know, I've been watching you make presentations for a while. You need to write a book. And
did you do it?
No. So he said, here's the publisher. You need to submit, you know, a proposal. So I submitted the proposal and they accepted it. They had two really nice reviews and they said, you know, you need to come back to us and tell us if this is one book or two, because you got a lot of stuff. So, yeah. So I've almost made a commitment to write a book. Which is going to be
really
called Beyond Safety.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations. Well, that is a big deal to even be in that step of the process.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal.
No, it's just a matter of me writing down the stuff that I've been talking
about forever. That's the problem.
And getting the, and getting the stories and getting the personality, if you will, in on a page, which, you know, words are a challenging thing. Sometimes to find the right word to express what I'm trying to say, that I can probably say more easily or explain more easily. But so I've written 15 articles, well, probably 17 total. So I can write a little. It's just putting the book together. That's going to be the challenging part.
Well, congratulations.
No,
that
thank
you're
you.
Even
Appreciate
in that spot. I think that is wonderful, really.
Thanks.
So you're presenting today. What are you presenting on?
Presenting on leadership gaps and how to fill them.
At the ASSP conference, there's one of those. It's, you know, when you're at like amusement park,
it sounds like a dunking booth,
and you hit the, and you have the hammer,
a dunking booth,
and you slam and the thing goes up in the air.
Yes, yes.
That's what we have here around the corner.
Oh, you're in a great spot. You're in a great spot. Yeah, yeah.
Like tragic, but, okay. So, leadership gaps.
Yeah.
Is it, I don't, okay. Wait, there's so many ways we could take this.
Well,
so what does that mean?
I'll run it back. I'll run the tape back a little bit. When COVID started, I've been doing leadership training in some form or fashion for, probably 30 years. And, you know, a lot of corporate organizations, starting from the executive team, working my way down through management and through first line supervisors. And I've learned a lot from that. And then when COVID came, I couldn't do that stuff in person. And I had to kind of take a step back and say, you know, am I going to allow myself to be able to do this remotely? Is it, you know, I don't feel like I can have the same impact. And I had to step back and say, Pete, 90 or 80% is okay. You know, you don't have to get the 99 anymore. 80% is okay. Because if you get the critical mass of people in the group and, you know, you got some good leaders there, they can make it happen.
Right.
And so I had to resolve myself to that. And then I had to restructure the whole program around the little bits and bytes that it takes to do something via Zoom or Teams or whatever the medium is. And
it still feels so disconnected, though. Did you feel connected?
I felt connected enough. Let's put it that way.
Enough.
I had to let myself be happy with that. Okay.
Good for you.
And it's worked. In 6 hours, and I do three 2-hour programs with these folks. They do a little homework in between. I recalibrate their brains. Okay. Like I got this little screwdriver.
Oh, and this is great.
Little screw, you know?
Yeah.
No, I what I'm doing is I'm basically changing the way they not just think about safety, but changing the way they think about how they make decisions and the influence of their decisions on the organization from a business perspective, not just a safety perspective, because decision making is at the heart of what I call balance, right? Balancing of values, balancing of benefit with risk, balance. And if you make decisions in an imbalanced way, it creates excessive risk, whether that's extra cost, extra time, extra risk, whatever. And so that's where my focus is on training organizations on how to make better decisions.
And the organization to make better decisions or the person?
Well, both.
Okay.
So if you look at decision making at three levels, right? Level one, which is the corporate level or the business unit level, right? And then level two, which is the operations level, the plant, the facility, the service center. And the level three is the worker.
Okay.
If we make, we, the organization, can make better decisions at level one, then those decision points don't have to get made at level two or level three.
They don't have to be made at all?
Well, no, they don't. Because we've balanced the equation from the beginning. So a lot of times what happens is, let's say somebody at the core or at business unit level says, hey, we need to shut down a plant and we need to move all that equipment to another plant. So now they move it to another plant seeing value, seeing benefit. But what they don't completely see is the implication of that on that plant, space-wise, time-wise, distraction-wise,
right.
Training, all of those things, right? So now with that benefit, we're creating risk. And because we didn't see all that risk, we didn't put the capital, the money into that up front. So then that then this all of this stuff gets handed to the plant. And then the plant has to figure out how to rebalance it. How do I make this thing that's inherently unsafe, safe? Well, the plant doesn't have the capital to do that,
okay,
like the corporate folks do. So now they have to go back and get capital, which is difficult to get, or they have to use OPEX, which is the money that we use to make a profit locally in the operation. And that becomes difficult. So what do we end up doing? We end up putting lower level controls in place. And those low level controls aren't effective. And they're costly. They take a lot of time, money, and continual effort. And those low-level controls require the last level of person to make the ultimate safety decision.
Okay, I see what you're
saying. See what I mean?
Yes.
And so if one doesn't do their job and two can't do their job, then three has to do it. And if three has to do it, it's somewhat overwhelming for three most of the time. And you're going to have failures. You're going to have exposures. You're going to have outcomes.
If one makes the decision, does two need to know or understand the decision?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. The decision-making process needs to integrate the plant and the workers in that, right? And the more level one knows about the reality of the plant and knows about the reality of the workplace, the better decisions they can make.
So one makes the decision, but involves two and three?
Yeah.
Okay.
Most definitely.
So is two going to get their little feelings hurt whenever they're not a part of the decision making?
That's the way it is today. Quite often is the.
Because I get my feelings hurt sometimes.
Well, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. You take things personally.
I do.
It's all right.
I mean,
it's all right.
I just do, and so I want to be a part. If two is not a part of the decision, are they going to be mad?
Well,
you hired me to do a job.
I think a lot of plant managers realize that they're not going to be part. It's just something their job is to figure out how to make their decision work. And I think most plant managers are calibrated to that.
I think if you explain that, then you give someone some autonomy and you say, I made the decision. I need you to help me make this work or whatever. So people don't feel like they're out of the process.
Disconnected.
Disconnected.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right? Because we can so easily feel that way if somebody's just doing that.
But we want to be a part of it in some way.
I think the plant management would love to be part of those decisions, but the reality is I think most plant managers today realize they're not, and their job is to make the plant work. Whatever comes to me, my job is to make it work.
Okay, that's fair.
And that's the situation of plant management today. Is my job is to take all the balls that get thrown at me and figure out how to juggle them.
Okay. So how does two involve three?
Well,
when they're making their decisions, right? Because aren't there some decisions?
Well, and I think that's where safety's at today, is getting the plant leadership to team with and engage with the workers in decision making, and to establish that level of communication and that level, what I call ownership, right? So it's like there's involvement, there's engagement, and then there's ownership. And you can't jump to ownership. Because when you jump to ownership, sometimes I think the workers think like you're just dumping things on them. But you set workers up to be the owners of their process. You're going to get a much better process.
Agreed.
Because if I am not, as a plant manager, understanding enough about the worker's job, then the balls get handed to them and they have to juggle them. So now if I am setting up the juggling with the workers, then I can start to put the balls together.
Okay.
I can say, okay, the process that we're going to make has to be just as good for quality, throughput, and safety. And here are all the parameters that we need to work with. Let's work together to put those things together so you don't have to make choices every day between safety and productivity and quality and other things, which is where we get hung up in making these decisions and make the wrong decisions for the sake of the context of the day or the situation.
So the title of your title of today of speaking is the
leadership
the leadership gaps. So where specifically are these gaps? Are they between one and two and two and three?
Yeah, you know,
because I'm very literal now. I am visual.
I am too. So here's a way to think about the gaps.
Okay, I want to see. Can you paint me a picture of the gaps?
I'm good.
All right, I remember this now from last year.
Yeah, it's all coming back.
Yes.
You know.
What was it? Puzzles.
Think about puzzles.
We talked about puzzles. Yeah. I know.
So think about a high-rise building, right? And think about the analogy of a high-rise building in terms of an organization building its safety approach and making it stronger, right? And as we go up floors, the safety approach gets stronger and stronger.
Okay.
And the reality is a lot of organizations have pretty robust safety staff and programs and maybe management systems and all these things that they do. And they're on the fifth, sixth, seventh floor. But when I go in there, and I start talking to the executive team, or maybe even go out to the shop floor, what I find is there's rebar missing in the foundation.
Ah.
Okay. The foundation isn't strong enough to hold up all of that stuff that you're doing. And that's why the floors keep kind of collapsing on themselves a little bit. Right. And you've got to go back to the really basic kind of atomic structure of safety, which is things like, do people understand what a hazard is? Do they see the difference between hazard and risk? You know, do they all look at the same thing the same way?
They don't.
If they don't, then all of that stuff that you're doing has a kind of a critical flaw in it at every floor,
So that building.
How's that for analogy?
Yes, it's really good. But I need one more visual really fast.
Okay.
That building, where's one? Is it at the top or the bottom?
Well, one, my point is, I guess, that one is they're the designers, they're the architects. There's the, right?
Okay.
They're the ones who should assure that every part of this thing is solid and balanced, not just for safety, but for everything.
Okay.
We're not just building a safety building here. We're building a structure that integrates all of these values in the foundational principles and on our way up for each floor.
Great.
And I think sometimes in the safety profession, we're so caught up in safety that, you know, we can't see the fact that other parts of the organization and other values are having the same problems we do. And I think separation in organizations, it's separation to a fault, you know, between the functions and all that. Because the reality is when you step back far enough, the roots of all of the problems are the same. They're the same.
They're the same. Exactly.
And that's kind of my shtick, you know, is let's take a step way back. Okay, we're getting too focused in on the problem and what we think the problem is. Let's get focused more on agreeing on the reasons, you know? So, you know, what set us up to get us here organizationally?
Okay. So what is next for you? Are you going to write this book?
I have to.
Okay, this is great. Yeah, do you have a mentor?
Do I have a mentor? Ooh, that's a really good question. You know, let's go back to the puzzle analogy, right? Okay. It's just like I think I told you last time, I'm a puzzle made up of other people's pieces, right?
Yes.
And so do I have a mentor? I have mentors.
Yes.
You know, agreed. I have a lot of pieces of me that mm-hmm. came from experiences with people, things I learned from people, how to look at things. I learn more from experience than I do from reading. I remember telling you, I'm not a good reader.
So
here
this.
I am writing a book, right?
I know.
Is it right? Remember
yes,
that?
Yes, I remember this,
yeah.
Yes.
And I'm not. I am much more, I get much more from looking at the environment around me and listening to things. And I'm much more sensorial in terms of learning than I am literal. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, I think mentors are so important, especially if I were to write a book, I would have to get a mentor. I mean, it's something is probably in my future, I'm hoping. And, you know, I wouldn't even know the first step. So it's, yeah, just a thought.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to try to write like I talk, which is a mixture of analogies and stories and
people. That is so good.
And
do it
in small little bites, you know, like
yes.
Who ate your cheese, my
yes.
cheese kind of thing. That kind of book to me, you know, it's kind of like a coloring book, you know, it's
yeah.
a simplistic
Absolutely.
Kind of, because, you know, I think what happens a lot of times mm-hmm. is we throw too much stuff at people mm-hmm. and the world throws too much stuff at people and people get overwhelmed by it. And I find, you know, going back to what I'm going to talk about today, the most simplistic things are the ones that people remember. Visual and simple.
Yes.
Visual and simple.
100%. I read a book recently. The chapters were like 3 pages.
Yeah.
And it was just these big, bold, bite-sized ideas and thoughts that were really provoking.
Yeah.
And gave me actionable tools and then moved yeah. on to the next one. And I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. I think it has to be that way, because my challenge in life is getting people to see what I see in my head, which is taking me a long time to do, because I've been seeing these things for a long time, but my inability to express them in a way that other people can see them, like yeah. I see them, that's been my challenge. So I've had to evolve a methodology to visually storytelling. Simplicity, all of those things are the essence of how I get my point across, you know?
I wish you all the luck. This is so exciting.
I appreciate it.
And so the next time I talk to you, it'll be just a whole new ball game.
No, I'll be the same guy. I'll be the same guy. So I'll be on a different base, but the same player.
Yes, absolutely. It's so good seeing you again.
It's the best. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for joining us on the Safety Storytellers Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Sospis, bringing you the best EHS software in the industry. If you are ready to learn more about how an EHS software can transform your safety program, your profits, and your entire company, head to www.sospis.com/podcast. That's www.sospes.com/podcast. We will see you next time on the Safety Storytellers.